What follows may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Episode 275.
The world is full of stories. Stories of mysteries. Of curiosities. Of oddities. Join Kat and Jethro Gilligan Toth for the strange, the bizarre, the unexpected, as they lift the lid and cautiously peer inside the box of oddities.
Hey!
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 Very, very nice of you to join me.
Thank you.
Here on time.
Sure.
I
know where this is going.
I really appreciate you being here to support me. And doing this team activity, like, together, you know, like, on the same page.
Here we go.
So, we were very fortunate to be asked to be on The Night Show.
It's like a regional late-night TV talk show hosted by Danny Cashman. And it was really nice to be asked to be on their Halloween episode.
Yes. He said that we were probably the most appropriate Halloween guests he'd ever had,
right,
which made me feel amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's what I want to be associated with. Thank you very much. So we had a great time. It was overall a great success. There were some road bumps, though. After we left, I was like, okay, so I feel like you were a bit distracted today. And we had a discussion and I was like, I just feel like you weren't there with me. And then we ended up being late for the show. And you were like, no, we weren't. And I was like, we were. So we were, they said our names and the walk-on was supposed to happen and we were late. And you were like, no, we weren't. I was like, okay,
Okay, what happened was, I thought we were taping at 7 o'clock. At 6 o'clock, I see the intro run on the monitor in the green room, and I'm thinking, oh, they must be doing the run-through.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm on my phone scrolling away, and then the PA comes and knocks on the door and says, okay, come on, guys, we're ready. And I thought maybe it was a run-through or something. So I said, okay, hang on, I gotta pee.
Mm-hmm. At that moment, I noticed the look on the PA's face was of terror. And I was like, are you, okay. So she was like, well, we're just going to take you then. And I said, okay. So I walked out to the entry point for the show, like where you go out onto the stage. And the band was playing the intro music.
Yeah.
And the host, Danny Cashman, said, here with us tonight from the podcast, The Box of Oddities, Jethro Gilligan Toth and Kat Walls. And I just looked back at the people behind the scenes.
I was peeing. You know, he could have potted up my lav mic. I had a wireless mic on. He could have heard me peeing.
I said, he's peeing.
I didn't know.
So they had to start the whole
thing over again. Yeah.
And reintroduce us. And at this point, JG's come out. So he's all like, all right, here we go. And I would just look at him like, yeah, here we go. Okay.
Anyway, we had a great time, the end.
It was great. The thing is, like, I had peed earlier, too.
I thought I had an hour.
Yeah. And the whole time I was just going, don't listen to me pee. If you have me mic'd up, don't listen to me pee. That's not pee. So that way, if they did have me potted up, they were not just hearing me pee, but also hearing me sing badly.
Right. Yeah. Well, as we've discussed before, I have a bladder the size of a Barbie doll head. And, and it's kept me from, well, long road trips.
It's like one of those commercials for bladder control medicine.
Yeah,
like, it keeps me from doing the things I love. We did have a great time. And thank you so much to Danny Cashman for having us. Quick note, you and I have both been a little sinusy the last couple of days. So a quick apology if at any point we sound weird or dip out of the segment or just start like aggressively clearing our throat.
That's why. In the distant past, the human brain suddenly doubled in power. Why? It was about 100,000 years ago.
I know why. Because we just watched a documentary about it.
Space aliens?
No.
No.
No, that's not what you're doing.
No. No. No, it's not what I'm doing. There is a hypothesis that says that 100,000 years ago, a bunch of apes got stoned.
Oh? Suddenly their mind was open to new concepts.
Yes, yes.
They became like really aware of the world around them in a different way.
It's the stoned ape theory.
I love it.
And it was first put forward by Terence McKenna. In his book, Food for the Gods, McKenna proposed, this is according to Wikipedia, that the transformation from humans' early ancestors, Homo erectus, to the species Homo sapiens, had to do with the addition of magic mushrooms to their diet. According to his theory, it took place about 100,000 years ago. He based his theory on the main effects or the alleged effects produced by the mushrooms, while citing studies by Roland Fisher from the late 1960s to the early 70s. So basically, in a nutshell, this is what he's saying. McKenna said, 100,000 years ago, Africa, for the most part, was a tropical rainforest. It was a jungle. But it began to go through a transformation to deserts, like we see in large portions of northern Africa now. And so the human forerunners were forced from the tropical canopy out into the desert to look for food sources. He believed that they would have been following large herds of wild cattle. Now, wild cattle poop a lot. Mm-hmm. And so their dung was everywhere, and it harbored the insects that he proposed were undoubtedly part of their new diet. So basically, when the desert started taking over parts of Africa, our ancient ancestors survived by eating insects from cow dung.
Mm-hmm.
It was also a great place for mushrooms to grow, because they're dung-loving mushroom, and they're often found growing in cow poo.
I've heard of that.
You've heard of it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Not that you've ever partaken in magic mushrooms.
Oh, no, I did once.
Did you?
Yeah, one
time. That's the time you ended up on the roof of the Sheraton.
Yeah, that's right. That's okay. Right. Never again. I turn into a terrible worry wart when I'm high, and I'm very concerned about everyone else's well-being.
How you ended up on the roof at the Sheraton is beyond me then, but there you go. That's the magic of magic mushrooms. So McKenna hypothesized that there were different effects. If they had a low dose of magic mushrooms, it would improve their visual acuity, and that would make them better hunters.
I don't know. Like, I've heard a lot of people say, like, I drive better when I'm stoned. And I don't believe that.
No.
I don't believe it for a moment. I think probably they may have thought they were better at hunting. I see everything, man.
He said it would improve visual acuity, particularly edge detection, meaning that the presence of psilocybin in the diet of early pack hunting primates caused the individuals who were consuming mushrooms to be better hunters than those who were not, resulting in an increased food supply and in turn a higher rate of reproductive success.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Then at a slightly higher dose, he said that mushrooms act to sexually arouse, leading to higher levels of attention, more energy, and potential stronger erections for men. And that, of course, gave them an evolutionary advantage as well. At a slightly higher dose than that, McKenna proposed that the mushrooms would have acted to, quote, dissolve boundaries, promoting community bonding, group sexual activities. Consequently, there would be a mixing of genes, greater genetic diversity, communal sense of responsibility for the group offspring.
Oh, so orgies are what created our society as we know it.
It could be.
Mushrooms and orgies.
At still higher doses, McKenna argued that psilocybin would be triggering activity in the, quote, language-forming region of the brain, manifesting as music and visions, thus catalyzing the emergence of language in the early hominids by expanding their evolved repertoire of troop signals. So they were communicating through visual signs and that sort of thing, but the mushrooms made them far more creative.
Sure, as they do.
He also pointed out that the psilocybin would dissolve the ego and the religious concerns would be at the forefront of the tribe's consciousness, simply because of the power and the strangeness of the experience itself. Now think about this. primitive man, he doesn't know really what's going on other than I need to eat and I need to poop and I need to have sex. Not necessarily in that order.
No.
It's always better to have sex before you poop. It's all part of evolution. Read up on it. It's Darwinism, for God's sake. But by eating these mushrooms, all of a sudden they're hearing music and they have no idea what that is, or they're having visions. And he,
dude, is that Crosby, Stills, and Nash?
In soldiers and Nixon's coming. Wow, dude, that's awesome. I feel like I need to paint on a cave wall. Actually, that's where he says cave painting came from. It was a stoned out early hominid trying to recreate what he was seeing in his mind by drawing it on the cave wall.
I don't understand. Like all these, I can see how like mushrooms would create these behaviors in like a prude, but you know, like a regular person already wants to do these things, right? Like most people have a need to express themselves. You don't need to get high for that.
Well, not nowadays, but 100,000 years ago, before art, how did art get invented? Stoned apes. What you had was a Homo erectus who was shrooming. So McKenna said that because of access to an ingestion of mushrooms, it gave humans an evolutionary advantage over other hunter-gatherer ancestors. Also providing humanity's first religious impulse. They eat shrooms and they're like,
what's it mean?
What does this mean? He believed that psilocybin mushrooms were the evolutionary catalyst.
All right, I can get on board that.
Which helped us to create language, projective imagination, the arts, religion, philosophy, science, and all of human culture sprang from this. McKenna's hypothesis concerning the influence of psilocybin mushrooms on human evolution is known as the stoned ape theory. Now, this might surprise you. This book came out in the early 90s. It might surprise you that a lot of scientists poo-pooed that theory.
No.
Yeah,
well,
I know.
Hopefully after the sex. Now, let me ask this. Did Lorena McKenna...
Terrence McKenna.
Was he known to partake in shrooms himself? Because I would guess, yeah.
Terrence McKenna was a proponent for psychedelics.
Oh, okay.
Let's put it that
way. Did he have a farm? Because this sounds like a very...
He was kind of in the same group as Timothy Leary and Aldous Huxley, early adopters of,
sure,
of psychedelics. So McKenna died in 2000. And according to an article from Inverse, passionately believed in this hypothesis, but it was never seriously considered by the scientific community during his lifetime. However, that is changing. At a talk in April at the Psychedelic Science 2017 conference, which is a scientific conference on psychedelics and attended by leading researchers and therapists and artists who believe in the therapeutic potential of psychedelics.
Sure.
It renewed an interest in this theory. Paul Stamets, a noted psilocybin mycologist, he advocated for the stoned ape hypothesis in his talk, Psilocybin Mushrooms and the Mycology of Consciousness. He said, quote, I present this to you because I want to bring back the concept of the stoned ape hypothesis. This is really important for you to understand that there was a sudden doubling of the human brain 100,000 years ago. From an evolutionary point of view, that's an extraordinary expansion. And there is no explanation for this sudden increase in the human brain. So he lays out the tenets of the stoned ape hypothesis that McKenna and his brother Dennis shaped. Stamets paints a portrait of primates descending from African canopies, traveling across the savannas, and coming across the largest psilocybin mushroom in the world, growing bodaciously, as he put it.
Yep.
He said, quote, I suggest to you that Dennis and Terrence were right on, Stamets announced while acknowledging that the hypothesis was perhaps still unprovable. Quote, I want you or anyone listening or seeing this to suspend your disbelief. I think this is a very, very plausible hypothesis for the sudden evolution of Homo sapiens from our primate relative.
I think if you are advocating for the use of hallucinogens as therapies, then absolutely you're going to want there to be some sort of precedent that you can point back to and say, look, when our ancestors did this, blah, blah, blah. So I can absolutely see why you would want very much for that to be true. And I'm not saying that it's not true. I can just certainly see why someone in that position would want very much for it to be true.
At its best, the stoned ape hypothesis is, as Stamets put it, described it, an unprovable hypothesis that fits some but not nearly all of the knowledge we have about the evolution of consciousness. At its worst, it's a gross oversimplification of the multitude of factors that may have jump-started modern human cognition and consciousness. He said McKenna does deserve credit for sparking the idea in the 1990s that scientists have only recently been able to prove psilocybin does alter consciousness and can trigger physical changes in the brain. Regardless of the holes that have been poked in McKenna's scientific logic, Amanda Fielding, founder and director of the Beckley Foundation, a leading psychedelic research think tank, told Inverse in this article that we should look past McKenna's errors and consider his greatest insight. The story of humankind is inseparable from our fascination with psychedelic drugs. Even if early man encountered psychoactive substances closer to the Neolithic period, she says, the experience of entering into an altered state of consciousness likely changed human society for the better. And so, whether it really was the one thing that jump-started human consciousness, I think that we can safely say, in all likelihood, that some of our ancient ancestors mistakenly ingested psychedelic mushrooms. We can also safely say that it probably freaked them the fuck out. So how did that affect their behavior? Did they put those two pieces, I eat these mushrooms and I feel this way? Or did they just think, what the fuck is this?
Yeah.
Is this some sort of a presence greater than myself?
I always wondered that about early humanity. And when did they figure out that boning equaled pregnancy?
That's a great question.
Because there's such a gap of time there, you know, and
there are still some people, I'm pretty sure, that haven't put those two things together.
That's true.
So we shouldn't judge. But anyway, mushrooms made us smarter. I just read a book about microdosing.
Yeah.
And how in therapeutic sessions, in an environment of research, they are finding that microdosing has become very effective in dealing with depression and anxiety.
Yeah, there are a lot of really interesting studies into microdosing of a lot of different things. LSD is, is one of them, to treat epilepsy and other issues. It's interesting for sure.
Well, psychedelics have been used throughout history as either a medicinal substance or one that would trigger spiritual experiences, like the ayahuasca ceremonies in South America or the peyote ceremony.
Yeah, as soon as you said going out into the desert, I thought peyote.
Well, there you go.
I was chasing that white dog, you know.
Yeah, you know, a little Carlos Castaneda moment for us there.
Oh, I love you.
What, that I've read Castaneda?
Yeah.
I was on such a Castaneda kick at one point in my life.
Well, you were also getting high a lot at that point. So let's be fair.
I think I blew through the first six books.
Blue is a really good term.
No, wait, that's not true. No. The first six Carlos Castaneda books. I think I started out with A Yaqui Way of Living, and the last one I read was The Eagle's Gift. But I probably read 1,800 pages of Castaneda all at once.
In one sitting?
I'm not sure if it was one sitting, because I lost all sense of time.
Sure.
And now, that thing in the middle.
Today's thing in the middle, absolutely amazing. Fallon posted on our Facebook group,
Freaks, a Box of Oddities podcast.
Storytime. Share your funny / awkward dating stories. I'm sure all of us freaks must have a few. And these got incredible. Too many for us to read. some of them too lengthy to read, but absolutely something that you should check out. It's a delight. Number five, Jacob writes, back about 15 years ago, I moved back to my old stomping grounds to help my folks out. I started getting chatted up by a lass decidedly younger than my normal comfort zone. After good-natured pressuring from friends, I went out on a movie and dinner date. Things were going swimmingly. She invited me back to her place for coffee. While she was in the kitchen, I looked around the living room. That's when I saw a picture that made my heart drop. Is this a picture of you and your older sister? I asked, knowing full well the older lass in the pic was an only child. Yep, it turns out I had dated her mom in the 80s.
Ouch! Okay then. Number four, Shelley writes, I went on a date with a guy when I was about 19 years old. At the end of the date, we kissed and he squeezed me so tight that I farted. His reply was, it's okay. I didn't even know girls farted until I was 21.
Number three, Carrie writes, someone I once knew took a girl home and she went into his bathroom, ate some of his hair, presumably from his hairbrush, and came back to inform him that she had his DNA and that she was a forensic scientist and had a pact with her coworkers that if any of them went missing after a date, they'd check each other's stomachs during the autopsy.
Number two, Laura said, I met a guy on Match and we went on one date. He was pretty nice at first, but got super handsy as the evening wore on, despite no physical response from me. I made an excuse to leave, and as he was walking me to my car, he declared, I'm going to masturbate violently when I get home. Some guys just have a way with words.
Right? That's nice. And number one, Stephanie says, I met a guy online. We decided to meet and go for a walk. About 10 or 15 minutes in, he told me that I had to go to a hotel with him, completely out of the blue. No preamble or discussions of this sort up to this point. And when I inquired as to why I would do that before getting to know each other better, he told me how he had to, quote, try me out to see how I performed before considering going out for drinks, dinner, etc. And definitely before he spent money.
Oh.
He spent the next 15 minutes while we were walking back to my car trying to convince me that everyone did dating that way.
Oh, my God.
No.
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 The Box of Oddities with Kat and Jethro Gilligan Toth. The podcast that got on the scale this morning and went, oh, shit. This is The Box of Oddities.
We got an email from Trenton and Blythe. Howdy there, you beautiful freak leaders. High above all, my fiancé and I were watching a cheesy MTV Scream show the other night, and we started to ask about the name of one of the characters. It went from, do you remember his name, to, what the hell was his name? Till we got to the point where we were going, and I bust out laughing at her as I shouted out, you sound just like Cat in the Shower, trying to remember Lee Greenwood's name. We spent the next 5 minutes in hysterical laughter going, and don't worry, we never did remember the guy's name.
Oh, no.
Thanks for all you guys do. You fill up so much of our time from driving out of town to rock hounding to driving 6 hours a day doing Uber Eats delivery.
Oh, that's God's work.
Much love, Trenton N. Blythe. What do you got for me? Tis your turn, m'lady.
I want to talk to you about the people of Piornal in Spain gather to celebrate the Jaramplas Festival. The festival can last a few days, but the main event of which happens on one day, and it involves a colorful monster, Jaramplas, who has horns and plays a drum, being chased through the streets by thousands of town folk who are pelting him with turnips.
Why have I not heard of this? And when can we go?
I know we've said this many times, but we need to go to this festival. We have to see this.
Well, another thing that we've said many times is how much we enjoy a good turnip pelting.
I just enjoy a turnip pelt. Like you get the skin just right. And then you put it over your shoulders. Mm-hmm. It keeps you warm during them winter months. Turnip pelt.
Part of Kat's vegetable fall and winter ensemble.
The Jaramplas gets ready for the challenge from the 19th to the 20th of January. In the morning, he puts on his costume, armor, and mask. Underneath the costume is protective gear, which is actually a relatively new development. So he goes through the streets of Pionol while playing his tambourine or drum. During the tour, the neighbors and oftentimes and more recently tourists will throw vegetables at him. It is most often turnips, but not exclusively turnips.
Oh, it can be other vegetables.
That's
as
right.
Well.
Gourds, very popular.
Okay. So it doesn't have to be a root vegetable or...
I think
a gourd.
No, it doesn't have to be.
Okay.
Like tomatoes, it wouldn't work.
Wouldn't hurt as much, though.
I don't think that's a concern of theirs.
I see.
At all.
What's this character's name again? Huffalump?
Harumplas.
Harumplas.
It's J-A-R-R-A-M-P-L-A-S. Harumplas.
Harumplas.
That's, I assume. I couldn't find a single video with it being pronounced. So
is there like a cottage industry that produces harumplas protective gear?
There's not. They have to make it, of course, because this happens in one place once a year. So there's not really a market
for it
to be made en masse.
Is Harumphlas a different person every year? Or
it is.
Is there a village Harumphlas?
There is a new one every year.
Okay. And are they elected? How do they select?
They're chosen.
They're chosen.
Yeah.
Okay. Against their will?
No, you have to sign up.
Who would sign up to be pelted with turnips?
We're getting there. I mean, are we going to do this? Or are you just going to?
I have a lot of questions.
Well, many of them will be answered if you would let me speak.
All right.
All right. The Harumphlas tries to avoid being hit, and the goal is to be able to withstand the root vegetable / gourd punishment as long as you can. So he tries to continue through the streets as long as he can, and that's how long the festival lasts, is how long he can handle being attacked this way.
Has anybody died?
Not that I know of.
Okay.
No.
That'd be a horrible end of the festival. And it would be difficult to get somebody to volunteer the following year.
Well, it has been difficult before. For the last few years especially, the festival is gaining popularity. It's becoming a much more hyped up event, especially for tourists. And the usage of turnips has increased quite a bit during this time, which is another reason why it's important that protective gear be added to the costume. Around 22 tons of turnips were thrown at the most recent Harumphlas festival.
How much?
22 tons.
22 tons. Well, at least it wasn't all at once.
It's, yeah.
Still 22 tons.
Yeah, over the course of a morning.
We have to go see this.
I know. So finally, Harumphlas, you know, he can't go on forever. So what he does is throws down his drumsticks. And at that point, the pelting stops.
Is there a penalty if he throws his drumsticks down and then he gets pelted by one stray turnip?
I don't think there's a penalty, but I think it's looked down upon
for sure.
Uh-huh. At this point, a group of the town folk will rush forward and help lift the heavy mask off of the Harumphlas. The costume itself can weigh around 100 pounds. And inside, of course, is this tiny little person who's covered in turnip pulp and sweat and is probably in an incredible amount of pain.
Not to mention the internal bleeding. The turnip-induced internal bleeding.
Generally, at this point, he will be raised up onto the shoulders of the townsfolk and he is paraded about because he is the most important, beloved, celebrated person in the town at that moment. He is just treasured.
My thought is if you've been pelted with 22 tons of turnips, the last thing you want to do is be jostled about by merry villagers.
It's how they celebrate him.
Wow.
No one knows exactly how this specific celebration came to be.
So they don't even know why they're doing it?
But Sebastian Diaz Iglesias, who is an anthropologist, he wrote his doctoral thesis on this ritual, says that, yeah, no one knows exactly where it came from. But they are, the root of the theory is boiled down to three theories. So the Haramplas could be a Christian warrior despised by people during the Muslim domination, as in referenced in the San Sebastian biography. The other is believed that he was a martyr killed by the Jewish for not renouncing Christianity. And finally, the most widely spread legend is the story of a man or werewolf who was punished after having repeatedly stolen and killed cattle in the neighborhood. So the town folk, you know, it's kind of a representation of the town folk driving the evil away with what they had on hand, which would have been root veg. Diaz doubts that the festival actually has a single origin. He said that it's probably a combination of pagan and Christian traditions with some other stuff mixed in. And as I said, it is an honor to be the Haramplas. The role can only be performed by a local, and it is such an honor that parents sign up their babies
really?
For this. Yeah.
So it's...
It can take decades
to be...
To become...
Wow.
To be chosen to be the Haramplas. The waiting list is about 20 years. For those who have been chosen, it's an incredible honor. The festival is very meaningful to the residents of the town, even though they don't exactly know why. And women are not barred from becoming Haramplas. But due to the armor and the helmet and the gorminess of the situation, the attack on the character, they're just not. Women are just not Haramplas.
All right. They haven't been officially banned from Haramplusing.
Right. That's right. There is, though, recently become a, like, kids' version of the Haramplas, and women are...
It's like the junior circuit?
Kind of. Like you know how I do the Tough Mountain obstacle course at Sugarloaf? So, you know, you go up the hill, and you go over the things and under the things, and it's in the water, and it's cold, and it's hot, and it's all the things. And they have a kids' version, where you get the kids out there, and it's like, oh, you've got to run through this pool, and oh, you got to... It's kind of like that.
I see.
And in these cases, there have been women Haramplas, but only for the kids to throw turnips at.
I see. They still use turnips, though. Do they regulate the size of the turnips when it's...
So you get kid-sized turnips?
Yeah.
Not that I know of,
wow.
But that's a great question. And maybe they consider that while sorting through the 22 tons.
22 tons. So imagine this. You're born. Your parents sign you up to be Haramplas.
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 Plus.
Plus.
Thank you.
Haramplas. And you don't know anything about it because, you know, you just shot out of the birth cannon.
Right.
And you get to be 20 years old and they start fitting you with your protective gear. And you're like, you signed me up for what? I have to do what?
They've lived in this town their whole lives. They've been a part of the festival 20 times at that point. They know what's up.
And
they also know how they will be celebrated afterwards.
All right.
I mean, you know, that guy gets some.
You're saying that there's a contingency of Haramplas groupies?
Yeah, but probably not for a couple of days because he's pretty battered up at the end of the day. There have been like severe injuries, bruising, broken stuff, you know.
Right. You snap off your root vegetable.
It's not great. there is a museum of the Haramplas, fully interactive. The festival is explained through panels and digital screens. There's also sounds and different types of music that's played during the festival, theories about the origin of the festival. It also has a collection of festival-related objects, like previously worn masks and costumes. There's also a life-size Haramplas model in the center of the attraction that is typical of his, you know, represented posture,
I see.
Which is kind of hunched over because it's really heavy.
I would imagine
it's a really
so.
Heavy costume.
I wonder if they have like practice sessions before the actual event where they dress somebody up like Haramplas.
Oh, I'm sure that there is some practice time because you have to be,
like a driving range.
You have to be able to run away.
Sure.
And since the armor has been added, I guess it is a lot harder to run away. So it kind of equals out because you can't tootle as quickly.
No.
In the mid-20th century, Spain's pagan festivals began to be seen as old-fashioned, and people wanted more modern things, and the haramplas almost died out. In the 1970s, there was a year when no one had wanted to be the haramplas.
The year without haramplas?
The person chosen was like, no. And
you signed me up for what?
So there was the person who had done it the year prior volunteered to do it again. So they did. It has been going on continuously every year.
That's crazy.
But more recently, it's become a very popular festival.
Well, and we're going.
We absolutely have to go. I got most of my information for this from Turismo Extremadura.
Extreme tourism.
Atlas Obscura. Cottonell recall information.
Wait, no, that was a whole different. That's a whole different story we need to tell.
No, I don't want to.
We got a notification from Sam's Club because, you know, with this pandemic and everything, we stocked up on toilet paper and butt wipes.
We've been buying in bulk.
And we've been buying in bulk. Well, you know, we're not hoarding or anything. We're just preparing for the winter. And we bought, you know, some of those Cottonelle butt wipes. And apparently there's been a recall because they're laced with some sort of bacteria. Unfortunately, you'd already used some of them.
Yep.
And you had to go to the doctor.
I did. I did. It was really fun because I called the phone number that was given, and a lovely young man answered the phone. He was like, Cottonelle, how can I help you? And I was like, so I bought some contaminated wipes, and I put them all over my vulva. And
I'm itchy.
And he was like, okay. And we went through the whole thing, and I was just like, the whole time, this guy has to be just mortified that repeatedly he has to answer the phone.
Can you imagine being given that job?
Woman after woman after woman is calling, going, I put this on my parts.
But the good news is,
I'm fine.
You're fine.
Just really skeezed out.
Yeah. Anyway, want to thank a few people for some stuff that they did.
Oh my gosh. We got a wonderful package from Olivia and Apple, a lovely combo of beer and coffee, like two of my very favorite things in the whole wide world. Mm-hmm. King State beers, we haven't dipped into because I'm doing Sober October. So I'm making you wait for me.
Yeah, it's not fair, but okay. Also, we just got a box from Crafty Beer Maven, who is a globally renowned beer vlogger. We haven't opened it yet, Crafty Beer Maven, but thank you so much.
Yeah, we just picked it up like legit an hour ago.
Just picked it up.
Also, big thanks to Josh Vidmer, who is an author who wrote the Stryker books. There is a V after Stryker, and I don't know if that's supposed to be pronounced V or five, and I should have asked, but I didn't, because I'm a failure as a human. But, oh my gosh, so the third book of this series, he put little flags in to the pages of the book, and on each of those pages is a little reference to the Box of Oddities.
Yeah, he's woven in Box of Oddity-isms.
It blew my mind. I'm overwhelmed with how amazeballs that is, and I cannot wait to read these.
Also, thanks to those of you who are supporting us on Patreon. If you have not supported us on Patreon and you have a desire to perhaps support us on Patreon, then you can go to patreon.com/boxofoddities and all kinds of benefits. And we're about to release our home phone number.
Yep, and a bonus episode should be dropping in the next few days, so yep. It's a good time to get up on there.
We look forward to seeing you guys next time.
Until then, keep flying that freak flag.
Fly it proudly, you beautiful freak.
And so, let it be known that the Box of Oddities belongs to you, and its fate is in your hands. Therefore, it's been requested by those to whom I report to beseech you for assistance. We ask but one thing of you. To provide a 5-star rating and a positive review. True, that is two things. However, 'tis merely a 5-star rating and a positive review. Also, subscribe to us. Okay, so three things is all we ask. Three things and three things only. Henceforth, the Box of Oddities commits to the telling of stories. Stories of the strange, the bizarre, the unexpected. We wish to offer our deeply felt gratitude and appreciation for your patronage. TheBoxOfOddities.com. Copyright 2020, all rights reserved.